Let's get this party started. Good morning, everybody. My name is Cameron Skinner. To my right here is Mr. Brian Keller. I am the general manager for Visual Studio. I actually run the Visual Studio Ultimate team, which means a bunch of devs, PMs, and testers kind of report up through me, and we build Visual Studio Ultimate, a number of crazy features like the debugger and IntelliTrace and a lot of the visualization tools that you see in Visual Studio is all built by the teams that I manage. If you saw the keynote, how many folks were in the keynote and saw that this morning? Excellent. Jason Zander talked briefly, showed a cyclical diagram that we're going to spend all day talking about. Brian and I are going to, I just want to give you guys a straight warning. If you don't like demos, this is not the talk for you. If you want to watch a whole lot of slides, this is not the talk for you. We're going to spend 80% of the time showing you bits, but we're going to show a lot of surface area in the product. So we're not going to be able to go deep, but we are going to mention as we go breakout sessions that you can go check out to go get more information on each of these areas that we see. Okay? Okay, so with that, our story starts actually with the title of our talk, which is Application Lifecycle Management, It's a Team Sport. And you're going to kind of see this throughout our talk as we talk about, you know, why is it a team sport? A lot of applications, in fact, how many folks are working on an application that's less than a year old? Just raise your hands. And how many folks are working on an application that's over, I don't know, 7 years old? This gentleman raises his hand before he even asks the question. That's excellent. Okay, how many folks are doing work on an app over 10 years old? Okay, great. This is about those sorts of environments where you are working on an application and working in a big team to take your existing assets and move them forward. Visual Studio itself is what? 15 plus years?
15, yeah. It's almost ready to get a driver's license and go off to college.
We're going to get this thing going. So the idea here is, you know, Visual Studio itself, when we started developing Visual Studio and the target customer, clearly it was the developer in mind. We were focusing on just that one person to make, you know, developing on the Microsoft platform just a super easy, seamless kind of environment. But as we started to grow up, we started to realize, you know what, it takes more than just devs to build software. It takes testers and program managers and marketing and engineering and operations. And so we started talking less about just what it means to construct. So you would have heard us in the past talk about the software development lifecycle, the SDLC. But what I want to talk about today is more about the holistic application lifecycle space, right? And that's where this graph here comes in. I want to talk today about what it means to build an app, right? Get the quality built into that thing, deliver it to somebody who cares, right? Somebody, a stakeholder, is paying for it or requesting features of that application. Engineering, developers, and testers need to go do something with it and deliver it to somebody, be it operations, be it your end user, your customers. They have to run that application. And then how do you monitor it? How do you understand what's going on with that application? Is it healthy when it's out there? How do you rev it? How do you make sure that it stays healthy? How do you take new functionality requests and feedback from your customers, et cetera, and get it back into the cycle and start all over again? And depending on how your organization runs, that cycle, this cycle that you see up on the screen here, that could be very fast, okay, or it could be very slow. And I'm not up here to say one is better than the other, actually. It completely depends on your organization. But the thing that I want to start talking about here is that in each, as you go around this graph, there are specific problems or challenges in each of these areas that we have all experienced, right? For example, if you start talking about misunderstood requirements, how many people have ever experienced a misunderstood requirement? Yeah. How many times have you gone out there and you've built exactly what was asked for, but it wasn't what they wanted, right? Yep. Everyone's like, yeah, I've done that too. Yep. This happens all the time, right? Now, at the same time, you've got these new requests are coming in from all it could be coming in from stakeholders, it could be coming in from your boss, it could be coming in from your wife. I mean, who knows? They're coming in from all over the place, right? And all of these have these conflicting priorities. Which one do you work on first? Which one do you work on second, third, fourth? Should you work on many all at the same time, right? These are all challenges that we as an engineering organizations have to deal with all the time. And so what I want to do is, Brian's going to help me, I want to start to demonstrate in each of these areas, specifically around feedback, how do you manage your priorities, et cetera. I want to show how the new functionality in Visual Studio 2012 can be used to help you with misunderstood requirements and conflicting priorities and so on. So Brian, you want to take it away?
That's right. So the first tool that we've built as part of the Visual Studio 2012 ALM capabilities is actually an add-in to PowerPoint. And what you see here is our PowerPoint storyboarding add-in. And PowerPoint actually turns out to be a really good tool for conducting storyboarding. It already has a lot of the functionality we need in terms of animations, in terms of controls, and the ability to just quickly get in and out of this tool. Even my mom, I can send her this PowerPoint presentation, and she's not very technical, but she can open it up, and she can understand the type of application we might be talking about. So you could throw this up on a presentation room screen, or you could send this an email. And the idea is that you're just getting quick feedback on the application before you've started to invest in that expensive code. And so to show you some of what we've done here, I'll just create a new slide. And PowerPoint already has this idea of built-in layouts. And so we give you layouts for doing things like SharePoint applications. So I can say this is fabricam.com. And of course, that's not a very interesting app, so I have another layout that I've built. It's a little bit more interesting. And sometimes you're modeling applications that are brownfield applications. And so what I might want to do is just open up my existing application and switch back and grab a screen clipping. So this then becomes a control that I can work with. And then what you see on the right-hand side is this rich shape library. So of course we give you all the controls you'd expect for building Metro-style applications on Windows 8, web applications, Windows Forms, WPF applications. In fact, we just shipped a set of controls to the Visual Studio Gallery, so we have a community area, and we expect people to contribute their own controls over time as well. So whether it's iOS, Android, Commodore 64, whatever you want to build, you can ship those controls out there.
That's going like hotcakes out here.
Exactly. And so I'll just move a button over here, and I'll just call this a create new button. And so one of the things I might do is take the time to stylize this. And let's say that I set the kerning and everything exactly the way that my corporate UI standards wanted me to. I can then come back to storyboarding, and I can say add to my shapes. This becomes a Fabricam button, and then I can reuse that. We also just shipped a brand new power tool that allows you to have much more fine-grained control over how you construct your shapes. So for example, if you wanted to build a custom shape and define when I resize it, this should actually stay pinned at the top, that sort of thing, then you can download that power tool for free. And so this is pretty straightforward. The next thing Cameron talked about is after we start building this application storyboard, we want to capture it somewhere in our backlog. This is work that we're going to commit to. So this is the new Team Foundation web access that we ship with Team Foundation Server 2012. Notice we have a really nice Metro-style UI down here. So these are all tiles that I've customized based on queries or based on my builds or based on the branch that I care about. So this refreshes during the course of my day. This can be my homepage, and I can quickly see at a glance how many open bugs I have, for example. I can also come into our backlog. So you'll notice that we've actually borrowed a lot of terminology from Scrum here. How many people practice Scrum or something like Scrum? It's about what I thought. If you're not practicing Scrum, rest assured that you can still use these tools as well. So if you start a new project with MSF CMMI, MSF Agile, these tools will automatically work. And if you go to Greg Bohr's session later in this week, he'll show you how you can customize these tools to actually work regardless of the process template that you want to use.
That's Dev 217, I believe.
That's right. So I might capture a new requirement. So as an admin, I want to edit employees. And I press Enter, and that's just saved to my backlog right away. I can also do things like turn on forecast lines. So you can see here, based on a velocity of 10, and that velocity can really be in whatever units you use on your team, whether that's story points or developer days, whatever you use, just be consistent in that backlog. And then you can change this to reflect, hey, maybe we want to get more money, or you know, feed our devs more pizza or something like that.
Red Bull.
See how that exactly. Mm-hmm. See how that affects the velocity. And then I can sit down with my stakeholders and say, you know, based on the velocity and where we've prioritized things, this is when you can expect certain features to show up in your backlog. So I know that Cameron wants me to work on this right away, so I'll do what you're never supposed to do in a Scrum team, but forgive us here, Ken Schwaber. We'll just assign that to our sprint that's in progress right now. And now you see that this is new work that we're assigning to a mid-flight sprint. So one of the things you'll notice here is that we have dates on iterations. And the other thing I can do is start to break this work down. So I'll say, you know, design the UI. We'll ask Annie to do that.
I thought I was supposed to do that.
You can implement the UI if you need something to do. All right. How much time do you want to give it?
Like an hour. It shouldn't take any time.
Okay, so that means 6 hours when Cameron says an hour. So we'll assign 6 hours there. And what you'll notice right away is we've actually put our team over capacity at this point. And so you'll see over on the right-hand side, my stakeholders are overcommitted, or my development team is overcommitted. And so one of the things that we're doing here is we're actually getting capacity for your entire team. And so here you can say that Annie is a shared resource. She works 3 hours per day on this particular project, and then Cameron is pretty much full-time on this project.
Can we fix that from here?
Can we fix, you want to
take some time off?
You got a lot of work on your plate, man. I don't think you can take some time off.
All right, fine.
So one of the things we might want to do here, though, of course, is update this sprint and say, hey, you know, this is work that's lower priority. We haven't started it yet, so we'll just punt that to a future iteration, and now my team's happy again.
Great.
So I can adjust this plan on a daily basis based on vacations or people being out sick. Once I'm happy with this plan again, I can switch over to this task board, and this becomes your modern-day implementation of Post-it notes on a whiteboard. And so here you can see that I can take this task and just drag it over, just like you'd expect. The great thing about Post-it notes on a whiteboard is they're easy, but if I'm working from home or if we've got people around the world, they don't always know what that whiteboard looks like. When Cameron's on his way to the restroom or whatever, he can just tap this and update it. So if you've got a nice touchscreen monitor, maybe in a team room, you can set that up. I can also do things like filter by individual. So I'll filter by myself. So this is really nice when I go to those stand-up meetings and show what I'm working on. I can also switch to a team member view. So here's what each individual team member is working on. And then one of the things you might notice here is that as I drag this work over, my burn down in the upper right is actually updating in real time. So there we get real time burn downs. So that's just a quick look at our agile planning and tracking capabilities.
That's great.
Now the other thing we might want to do is once we've actually built something, go back to those stakeholders and get some feedback from them. And so if we had to get feedback from everyone in this room on, say, Visual Studio, for example, that would be kind of an arduous task. We would have to maybe sit down with you during the course of the week and kind of watch as you're using the tool. That doesn't really work, especially when we fly back to Redmond and you go back home. We really need a better way of capturing that feedback in an actionable manner for the team. So another thing we've done is we've actually built feedback right into Team Foundation server. So what I can say is I want to request feedback from Cameron. And I'll ask him to go to my staging server here. Maybe if I wanted to tell him how to log into the staging server, I could give him those instructions here. And then I'll say, does the employee page provide the right functionality? And when I do that, that's going to basically generate an email that will go to Cameron and ask him to provide feedback on this particular staging site. So if now if I switch back over to Cameron here, he's got an email for me, and he can give me some feedback.
Cool. So the idea here is I'm playing the stakeholder at this point, right? The team went away, and they did a bunch of stuff. They used the PowerPoint storyboarding, and we all had a conversation about that. And then they went and built some bits, and now I got to get in there and actually see what they actually built. So I'm going to get in there and click this link, which is going to fire up the feedback client right here. This is the app that I want to give feedback on, and I'm just going to click Next. And at this point, I can see that the team did a bunch of stuff here. It's looking pretty good. I'm just going to say, hey, nice UI, like it, right? But I do see a little issue here. I kind of want to get, you know, some IDs of my employees in here. Actually, I want to look at the employee tab because that was what is asked for. I'm going to come in here and I'm going to take a little screenshot. Click the right button. And I'm going to come in here and say, look, you know, in here, what I want to do is I'm going to double click on this. And I want to annotate a little area because what I want is a column. I want to put a new column in here for employee IDs. Okay, I'm just going to save that out. And that'll jam that in here. So I'm going to say, please add a ID column. Okay, and I'm going to rate it. Okay, and I'll click next. And basically at this point, I've taken some time to look at the UI, made a few comments. I can do a number of other things. In fact, if I failed to mention, I could go in here and have, I could record myself talking to the app in many ways. So I could sit there and instead of having to type everything, I could record myself either just singing its praises or not, and capture all that feedback and get it part of the work item that I'm actually going to create when I submit and close. Because what happens here is when I submitted and closed, it pushed all of my feedback that I just typed into that client and attached it to a work item that then goes to TFS and goes back to engineering so that these guys can actually, you know, incorporate that feedback into their all-up workflow so that they can then start to break that down, add more work items, or what have you.
That's right. So if I refresh my dashboard here, you'll notice that the feedback incremented. And so if I now look at that feedback, I see that feedback response that came straight from Cameron with his lovely drawing on here.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time on that.
And if I wanted to, I could also create a new work item, so maybe a new product backlog item or a bug. I could link it directly to this feedback response. And that's really nice for a few reasons. Number one, when the dev opens this up, the dev can see the video recording or the audio annotations and really understand exactly what Cameron was asking for without having to go through some intermediary at that point. The other nice thing is that this gives me an audibility surface later on. So if Cameron said, hey, this app looks great, and he signs off on it, yep, and he complains about it after we deployed it to production, then we can go back and say, hey, you signed off on this. So there's just a lot of uses for this tool. The other thing I'll mention is that the feedback client is completely free.
Yeah.
You can have hundreds of users use this. You can even have them be provisioned in your hosted Team Foundation service account, so you can just go add their live ID, which is really nice if they don't have access to your corporate network, send out all the feedback requests, and then as they get that, they can download and install the free tool and then send that right back to TFS. They don't need a CAL or any other licenses to do that.
Great. So let's bounce back to slides here. I just wanted to emphasize a couple things. In order to attack this problem of misunderstood requirements and competing priorities, we showed you the PowerPoint storyboarding tool. The idea there is, again, have a conversation before you actually start writing code and make sure everyone's on the same page as possible. But then we actually showed you how to manage priorities through the task board and then to get the feedback of the running bits once you get them running and maximize the feedback. And again, this is this get this loop going so that we can make sure that what you're building is what was wanted, not what was asked for, if that makes sense. So now what I want to do is I want to start working my way to the next part of this cycle here, which is down here in the develop section. And this is where we've classically been. This is where we focus on development activities. For all you devs out there, this is where you're going to see some brand new functionality here to help you deal with things like time on task. Have you guys ever had a situation where you're in your office or your cube or whatever, you're trying to work on a bug, and someone comes in and interrupts you? That doesn't happen at Microsoft.
It's usually you, actually.
Yeah. So it's a real problem. Like, have you ever been like right there, you're stepping through the debugger and you're like, I'm about to see it, I could see it, and someone comes in and you lose it. And there goes 2 hours. It happens all the time. So we've put a lot of effort that we're going to show you today into how do we keep you focused on what it is that you're working. And if you do have to get interrupted, how do we keep the flow going so you can actually put that stuff on a shelf and go do something? But also, a lot of times that can conspire against you, and sometimes the quality of your code suffers. If you're losing attention on the code, maybe you missed something. Perhaps you didn't get the kind of quality time with that code that you wanted. Perhaps you didn't have time to get unit testing run or whatever. That's another major piece, a major focus area for us with Visual Studio 2012 is how do we maximize the quality of the software that you're building? How do we help you get there as in a seamless and friction-free environment as possible? And then fundamentally, if you've got all these things that are conspiring for your time and interrupting you and you're not able to run the tests that you want to do, et cetera, you're going to miss deliveries. You're going to have, has anyone ever missed a date? No, not here. I'll ship on time. It happens, right? You guys have all heard the Standish chaos reports about, canceled projects because of blah, blah, blah. This is a real problem. And so when we look at what's in Visual Studio 2012, it's about developer productivity, right? How do you get your job done as fast as possible, but not just get a job done, get the right job done, get the right software built? And so I want to show you some of what we've got in 2012 now.
That's right. So this is Visual Studio 2012. You saw it this morning in the keynote. And I'm using the release candidate here. And notice that, of course, I'm in the middle of some work. I've got some open files. I've got some breakpoints set. If I had multiple monitors, I might have multiple windows all over the place. I know a lot of you do that. I do as well. And Cameron, of course, comes in and
hair on fire. Oh, I
exactly.
Need something.
It's always a priority.
Yep.
So now what I can do is if you take a look at the new Team Explorer that we have, we like to say this is the reimagined Team Explorer, keying off of our Windows friends. Yep. You'll notice that I can, of course, access all of my work items, my pending changes, my builds, and so on. But I also have this new area called My Work. And My Work is the dashboard of the things that are most relevant to me. So this is my customized view into what I'm working on. And you'll notice up here at the top, I have this section called In Progress Work Items. And there's this button called Suspend and Shelve. And so what I'll do is I'll go ahead and suspend this work. And what it's going to do is save all my changes, back them up onto Team Foundation Server as a change set. So I'm not going to lose anything, even if I lose my hard drive. I'm going to go work on whatever was more important for Cameron. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, once I'm ready, I'm going to come back. I'm going to say Resume. This is going to pull my changes down back off the server, re-automate all those windows, multiple breakpoints. If I had multiple monitors, it would reanimate that exactly for me.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so rehydrate. So this is, again, you've been interrupted. Put all that stuff over there so you can work on something else and get back at the task before the interruption, okay? Now, that's fantastic. That's all new in 2012. But another thing that I wanted to point out a couple new features in Solution Explorer that will also help you get back on task as quickly as possible. And these are little features that I think we kind of miss sometimes because we like to talk about a lot of the big, new, shiny objects. But there's a bunch of new functionality in the Solution Explorer that I really want to call to your attention. So for example, let's say I want to quickly understand, I want to filter my Solution Explorer and just show pending files. So these are files that I'm currently editing, let's say, and I just want to filter the Solution Explorer down to that. A couple ways I can do that. I can come up to this little new button here, and I can just click that. And what happens is the Solution Explorer just filters down to just show the files that I have changed. Okay? So these are files that are pending to be checked in, that kind of thing. Okay? The other thing that could happen here, and I can just toggle that on, toggle it off. I can also hit the Control Left Bracket P. Okay, Control F bracket P turns it back on.
Okay. So easy to remember those.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, really fast and fluid. The other thing I can do is, a real common issue is when you are exploring your source code, you're trying to get your head around something. Maybe you're opening up lots and lots and lots of files. You can also filter your Solution Explorer based on the files that you have open in your Docwell. So I can just pull this down, and you'll see I've got an open files filter. And so in this case, well, it happens to be the same as my checked out, but if I had a lot, it would filter based on that, so you could see what exactly is going on there. Another thing to point out here real quick. We have done a lot to try to minimize, in order to stay focused, try to minimize how many times you have to switch between windows and things like that. So we've always had the class view in Visual Studio. What we've done in 2012 is we've merged Class View and the Solution Explorer into one. okay? And there's many interesting things that this allows you to do. So for instance, if I'm in this customer controller CS file here, I can then twirl this disclosure arrow here and see the actual type there. And it takes me to that code. But at this point, I can also, I can go and say, hey, you know what, to create a new dependency graph based on that type. And we'll build and start to create a graph here. But if I start to even drill down further into this, you'll start to see that I've gone from the physical file, which was customerscontroller.cs. You'll see that it has a type in that. If there were many types, you'd see that under here, customerscontroller. And then inside customerscontroller, I've got a number of methods and properties that I can see right in the Solution Explorer without having to go toggle over to the class view or what have you. Okay? And at this point, I can also come up here and do another search here on the Explorer. If I wanted to filter, if I wanted to search for something else, if I wanted to come here and say, let's say I'm looking for customer, everywhere in my solution where customer is, I've got a filter. I can do a search real quick and easy. Okay? I think that covers it. Did I miss anything in the Solution Explorer?
Well, that's no longer modal, which is another nice
oh,
thing.
Oh, yeah. So while I was doing this, you'll notice that as I was doing that, I was building this little graph here, it didn't lock up Visual Studio. I was able to do that search, et cetera. I can even click on this and start, you know, dragging more stuff out of that graph. So like this. Just drag it out. And it starts to connect these things. So I can build up a graph, you know, while I'm interested in trying to understand why two things are connected, what do the dependencies look like, I can kind of build that up as we go.
And the look-aside database there, too.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Just a couple things I wanted to point out, you know, because these are little things, but I think really make a difference for you devs out there.
So what I'll do now is I'll go ahead and check in those changes that we just made. And so we'll go back to check in. And what are we going to do next? Oh, yeah, that's right. So for years, we had this this MVP within Visual Studio, and he kept asking over and over and over again, give me the Google box for my work items right within Visual Studio. So we didn't know what he meant, so we binged it, and we found out what Google he was talking about. So what I can do now is I can now search for work items directly within Visual Studio. So that's a lot of people have asked for that. Thank you. You can clap anytime, by the way.
Go for it.
Notice that I have this this work down here, and I happen to know that Annie is not going to be able to do this today. So what I'll do is just reassign this to myself. And basically what we're doing is we're adding some support to help our friends in the north connect to our website. So we want to make sure that our zip code is actually a little bit more customer friendly here. I think, let me see here. Oh, there we go. That's what happens when we switch back and forth. I'm no longer in the zone because I'm now in Cameron's zone. Okay, getting back in zone here. All right, so I just made a change to this regular expression. And what I'd really like to do is have Cameron take a look at this regular expression. So another top request that you guys have asked for is to build code review right into Team Foundation server. And so this is really nice. I can just drop back over to Team Explore, and I can say request code review. And I can ask Cameron to take a look at this, and maybe Julia to take a look at this as well. I'm not quite sure who's going to get to it first. And we can say, you know, does this regex look right? And at this point, I can go ahead and submit this request. It's going to go straight over to Cameron. And at this point, if I now switch over to Cameron's desktop, then he can take over here. And he's a dark UI guy.
So another thing in 2012 is we've got a dark and light theme. Has anyone seen that before? Anyone? How many people like dark theme? Yeah, I think you will like this one. I love the dark theme in 2012. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to come over here to my work. And inside my work, I see this new code review request right here. Brian just sent that to me. And I'm going to just double click on that. And so what I see here is I see the fact that there's some files, and I'm going to click on address. And I can see the differences between what Brian has just done and what was there. And this is a new diffing experience inside Visual Studio 2012. I think this is the first time we've updated that UI in 15 years.
Probably.
And it's That's great. And you can hit Alt, Shift, Enter to go to full screen on this so you can get more space here. But you can quickly get in here and see what's different, what isn't. But more importantly than that, I can come in here and I can say, regular expressions. You know what? This is all looking cool. In fact, I'll add an overall comment to this review and just say, hey, overall looks good.
Actually, before you go any further, notice this accept or decline.
Yeah.
That's a nice feature if you know that you're going to be in here for a while working on this code review. This is a really simple one. But if you wanted to just signal to Julia, hey, I've got this one, that's going to send that back to TFS. So when she looks in her dashboard, she'll notice that Cameron's already taken care of
that's
it.
That's great. Yeah, and you don't have to. It's just an indicator to the rest of your team that says, hey, I'm about to work on this. But so in this case, I'll just say overall looks good. However, I do want to make one change here. I'm going to right click here and say add a comment. And I think we should say, change zip method to postal code, for instance. Okay? And then save and close. And at this point, let's say I'm ready to go. Code review is done. So I'm just going to say send and finish and looks good. Okay, and then that pushes that review back to Brian.
That's right. So now if I switch back over.
To the light theme, please.
To the light theme, thank you. So if I refresh my UI, you'll notice that I get this back from Cameron, and that's great. I can maybe decide if I want Julia to still look at this or say, Cameron got this one. Remove her from the code review so she knows it's no longer in her queue. I can see the feedback that he's got from there, so I can create a bug for that or a new work item if I want to. The other thing that's really nice about this is that this code review request and the code review response, they're both work items within Team Foundation Server. So I'll show you how you can look later on to say, hey, this piece of code that we checked in and migrated to production, did it actually get code reviewed? Mm-hmm. And then we can actually get that full transparency. So that's one of the really nice things about getting this conversation into TFS as opposed to making it a hallway conversation or email back and forth. Another thing that we've done, which is kind of tangential here, but I really like this capability, is if I switch over to, let's say, Source Control Explorer, how many people like to work with Source Control offline? Like you're not always connected to Team Foundation Server or network. All right, so if you've tried to do this with TFS in years past, it can be a bit of a pain. You have to remember to set TFS to tell it that you're offline. Or if you try to open up a file in a third-party editor, for example, you'll notice that that can be a big problem as well because you forget to set the file to read-only. We've done away with all of those problems now. So if I drop into Explorer now and maybe I want to open up this README file, and we'll say, hello, TechEd. We'll just save that. Notice there's no longer a complaint about this file being read-only. I can also create a new file here to show you what that looks like. And now when I drop back to Visual Studio and I go back to my pending changes here, you'll notice that it automatically picked up my README change. So we just have File Watcher going on in the background. We also have this detected change in here. So by default, if you do any file deletes or file adds, we're not going to just automatically include those in your pending changes. We want that to be an explicit action. But what I can do is say promote, and now that's included as part of my pending changes. So that should hopefully clear up some of the rough edges with both working offline and using a third-party tool. This also, by the way, works in Team Explorer everywhere. So if anyone's doing Xcode development and you want to potentially get all of that data saved on TFS because that's your corporate standard, something like that, what you can do is install Team Explorer Everywhere 2012 in Eclipse on Mac, and then what you do is switch over to Xcode, make your applications, and then switch back to Eclipse, and you'll see all the changes that you just made. So it's kind of a two-step side-by-side process, but I think you'll find that it allows you to work and get all that data that you might want to store in TFS, even though Xcode doesn't support native TFS integration. So that's a nice capability. The other thing I might want to do before I check this code in is perhaps run some unit tests.
Yep.
So let me switch over to the Test Explorer.
Who's using unit tests in their organization today? Show of hands. OK, great. NUnit. MS Test, X Unit, couple. Something I didn't ask. Never mind then. Let's move forward.
So what we've done, notice that, you know, not everybody's on the same unit testing framework. And even if maybe I use MS Test religiously, I might go download an open source project that has a bunch of unit tests that are written in XUnit. I would love the ability to run all of those from within my same Visual Studio experience. So let me just redock this guy. Notice that when I built my project, what we did is we actually looked across the entire solution for any unit test that matched the type of test that we have adapters installed for. So we're going to ship an adapter in Visual Studio for MS Test. We have a brand new adapter for C++ developers as well. And then we also have these third-party unit test adapters, one from XUnit, one from NUnit. What are some of the others that have been announced?
Some that you can, a couple frameworks that you can pull off the gallery, some support for QUnit and Hutzbus, which are JavaScript unit testing frameworks, are also available.
Okay. So now what I'm doing is I'm running all those unit tests, even though those unit tests maybe have been mixed types of unit tests. So one of the things you'll notice down here is that I have a failing test, and if I look at the test results down here, I can jump either straight to the code that's in my test that threw that exception, or the code that's in my application. And notice this is an XUnit test here. So one of the things I might want to do is, you're an XUnit guy, how do I ignore this test?
You want to put a skip equals.
Skip equals demo.
We're demoing
demo.
Now, yeah.
That's right. So now if we save this, run those tests again, it's no longer going to show up as a failing test. So it just says that I've skipped that test, which is great. Notice here, it crashed Visual Studio. So
nice work.
So we're going to file a bug.
We're going to get some user feedback on that.
Exactly. So let's see. See if I can recycle here. So it's not quite RTM yet.
All right. It's not a demo until something breaks.
Exactly, exactly.
So we're doing fine.
Right in the middle of our code quality stanza, too.
Yeah,
don't you love that?
I love that one. Yep, that's good. Listen, while Visual Studio reboots, I'll take the time to actually point out a couple breakout sessions. If you want to find out more about the unit testing stuff, for instance, Peter Provost is giving a talk, Dev 214, introducing the new Visual Studio 2010 unit testing experience, as well as Dev 411, which is testing untestable code with fakes in Visual Studio 2012. That's going to be a very cool one. Talk about some things that we didn't even touch on here. I highly recommend. Wang Lu is also going to be talking about Dev 316, which is application lifecycle management tools for C++. There's a bunch of new C++ capabilities in the product around some of these features, and Wang is going to go through a lot of those. How are we doing?
Knock on wood, I think we're ready to go again. So so the other thing that we've done is we've taken a really great technology from Microsoft Research called code clone analysis, and we've baked that into Visual Studio.
So let me pause you. How many folks are aware of the probably the best, most widely used design pattern on the planet for code reuse? Anybody know what that is? Cut and paste. That's the one. So we wanted to put something in the product to help you detect where that design pattern is in use. And we've called that code clone. Go ahead, Brian.
That's right. So what I just did is I ran a code clone analysis against my entire solution, and it came back and it told me I have this strong match. And so notice this doesn't have to be an exact match. This is a strong match, and we're actually analyzing this at an MSIL level. So we're able to determine, hey, even though these are different variable names, maybe they derive from the same base type. And it's really a nice technology that uses a nice heuristic algorithm here. You'll notice here that I have this service tickets controller. And if I open up this other match, I have another service tickets controller over here. Hmm. One of the things that we've done in Solution Explorer is we've given you the ability to just sync straight to your Solution Explorer. And now I can say, oh, OK, now I know these aren't actually the same file. One is actually in this Fabricam fiber.web solution. And the other one is in my extranet.web. So clearly what happened is somebody said, hey, this is the code that I need over here. Let me just copy it and paste it over there. And if we take a closer look at this, we can even compare these two lines or compare these two methods. and see exactly what happened here. So you'll notice that somebody copied it, they pasted it, they changed the very last line of code. So this is a great candidate for me to go do some refactoring, maybe put this into some common class that I can just reuse and maintain once. So that's one use for code clone analysis. And basically, when you run that code clone analysis against your entire solution, it's looking for fairly coarse-grained blocks of code that look to be similar. So it's not going to tell you, hey, 100 times in your solution, you initialize in x equal to 0. But occasionally, you might want to say, there's this small block of code that I'm working with, and I'd like to know where else am I doing something similar. So here you can see I have a customer repository. I'm doing an insert or update, and then I'm saving that. And so what I might do is say, find matching clones in this solution based on just that scoped section of code. And now, when I look at that, I can see there's a couple of places that I've done something similar. And so down here, you'll notice that I have a customer's controller. I'm doing a delete operation on this, so it's not even an insert. I'm doing an employee's controller and a create. Employee's controller, service tickets controller. So you can see that it's really based on this heuristic, and it's able to look for things that are similar, even if they're not identical. One way I might use this is, let's say I'm a new developer that hasn't worked with this particular class before. I might want to know, do other people on my team tend to wrap this in a try-catch block? Or maybe I'm going through and wrapping everything in a try-catch block. Where else do I need to fix this bug? So there's just an endless number of possibilities that you can use right here.
Great. So now I want to pop back over to the slides at this point, because I think it's time to move to the next area of the graph. And that is in the operate side. Okay, so we've talked about how do we deal with misunderstood requirements, how do we keep you focused on quality code and getting your task done, and now I want to talk about what does it mean to keep your app out there and running, and what does it mean to understand what is a healthy application, and if it goes bump in the night, how are you going to fix that and get it fixed as quickly as possible, right? A lot of times, like if you're in an organization where you've got an operations team that has to talk back to an engineering team and vice versa, there can be a lot of time wasted in trying to just talk about what the problem was that you saw in production or trying to reproduce the error, that kind of thing. And so what we've done in 2012 is spent a lot of time on trying to get some rich, actionable data back from operations in production, so the running app, back to engineering, so that you can spend your time fixing the problem and not talking about it, so that fundamentally we can increase that mean time to resolution from bang in production to fixed in production, get that as fast as possible. So we've done a couple things in 2012 that Brian's going to show you around our IntelliTrace product line and System Center.
That's right. So if we switch back to our running site, let's pretend this is a site that's running in production right now. And so we're starting to get some calls from our users, because occasionally when they click around, occasionally they get an error that looks like this. And this is nice. We did a custom error message so that it doesn't bring up the ASP.NET yellow screen of death or anything like that. But the challenge with this is, of course, we don't at this point know anything else about what's going on. And so one of the challenges, as Cameron mentioned, is you've got these applications that are running in a production environment. You can't just attach your debugger and see exactly what's going on. You don't oftentimes have the same sets of tools that you can use to diagnose and understand what those issues are. So if anybody's used IntelliTrace from Visual Studio 2010, then you're already familiar with the capability I'm going to show you next, where you can capture a historical debugging session from either an application right within Visual Studio that you've F5'd, or even from a test environment. So you can have your testers testing the application and capture that IntelliTrace log that they can then file back to you, and you can step back in time and see exactly what was happening within that application. Previously, you were not able to use that in a production environment, however. But now what we've done with Visual Studio 2012 is we've licensed IntelliTrace, and we've made it possible for you to use this in a production environment. You can take all of the commands that we give you, put that maybe on a USB key, walk that over to your data center if you don't have network access over there, plug it into the machine. These are the set of commands that you can run. You basically import the PowerShell commands. You say, I want to start collecting IntelliTrace, perhaps against an ASP.NET application pool. Then what you do is you come back to your application and you reproduce the issue, or if you've got customers hitting it, you just wait until that issue's been hit. And then you can go ahead and checkpoint that IntelliTrace file or stop collecting at that point. And that's going to give you a file that you can then walk back to your developer workstation and use within Visual Studio. And so here this is an IntelliTrace file. If I open up this IntelliTrace file, it's going to show you that historical debugging view. And so if I jump into maybe one of these exceptions, I can actually launch straight to the application, or to the point in my code within the application that threw this particular exception. Notice here that I also get locals down here as well. So here's where the exception was thrown. Up here you can see this is the exact line of code. If you're going to use this, make sure that you're archiving source and symbols so that we can match that up, because probably you're working on the next version and your production is actually running the N-1 version, for example. Over here you can see this historical debugging view, so you can actually go back in time and see exactly what was happening. Notice we even have things like what was the ADO.NET call that happened at this particular time. And so maybe the reason this is null is we weren't able to get the values we needed from a particular database to set that up. So it really allows you to go back in time. The other nice thing about this is that you can occasionally turn on IntelliTrace and find errors that you didn't even know you had. Because oftentimes you have exceptions that are being thrown and caught within your application, and most of that maybe doesn't even impact user functionality, but sure. It could be some critical audit log. Maybe you're a bank, and you need to go back in time and make sure that you're capturing all of that audit log detail.
Has anyone ever written a blank catch block? No?
Yeah, I've done that.
No one's going to admit it.
I'll fix that. That's a to-do. I'll put some real error handling in there. Yeah, this will catch that.
Exactly. So this is something that you can use in a few ways. You can even redistribute it with your applications. It works even with Windows Forms, WPF applications as well. You can even turn on a debugging menu in your toolbars. So, for example, maybe I have a hidden admin screen in my web application. So rather than having to drop to PowerShell, I could go to some section of my site where I turn this on, I capture the data that I need, and then I turn it back off when I'm done.
So the key piece here that Brian is highlighting is that this is essentially a log file. He double-clicked on an iTrace file that we got from production. Looks like we're debugging the live app, but it's not. This is an historical kind of log debugger of the application state, okay? Larry Guger is going to be talking more about this particular functionality, IntelliTrace functionality, in Dev 365. It's called Advanced IntelliTrace in Production in Visual Studio 2012. Highly recommend you check that out. He's also going to show off at the last, 10 minutes or so, some of the new functionality coming in our first feature pack later this year around this one. Great?
Great.
Okay. So let's pop back to slides now. Okay. So at this point, we've gone full circle on this. We've talked about what it means to ideate around your requirements and how do you make sure that you're getting the right jobs done. We've talked about a number of new functionality in Suspend and Resume. I do want to make sure that you understand we just scratched the surface on all the stuff that's coming in 2012. For instance, I didn't even get a chance to show you exploratory testing or the new capabilities on the operations side that our partners Preemptive have helped us with in terms of preemptive analytics. Bunch of really great stuff coming in the product line that I highly recommend you check out sometime this week.
In fact, I have a session on manual testing later this afternoon. I'll be talking about some of the new lab management capabilities. So for those of you that were testers in the back, I hope to see you there. And then for those of you that are devs as well, there's a lot in that session as well that'll show you why you want your testers to consider using these tools so that you can get really rich, actionable bugs as opposed to bugs that you can't necessarily reproduce. A few other sessions to mention here. We have Justin Marks and Sebastian from Preemptive. They're going to be doing a session, Dev 321. They're going to be showing off the Preemptive analytics capability. That's a really nice tool for being able to instrument your application and get back all sorts of data, whether that's exceptions that your end users are encountering in the wild, or you can even go an extra level deeper and get data that shows exactly what features they're using or not. So these are capabilities that Microsoft's been benefiting from for years. Every time you send those Watson reports or when you opt into the Visual Studio Customer Experience Program, we're getting anonymous data in the background that says, hey, how many people use that feature versus not? It helps us make prioritization decisions, but that's an expensive infrastructure that we've had to maintain for a long, long time. Now they're opening that up to the world so that you can just go to Preemptive and they'll take care of that for you.
Great. So a few things that I wanted to mention before we wrap this up.
go grab the Release Canada Visual Studio 2012 if you haven't already. It's ready to get your feedback on. There's all kinds of new stuff in there that we've just showed you. Try that out. It's got a Go Live license on it. And what that means, Go Live, means that it's ready for production and we will support you in production even if we change something as we go towards RTM. So we're trying to get you folks to take these bits and put it in production and start really getting some deep feedback that only real usage can bring to the product. Download Brian Keller, this gentleman to my right, has made this massive VM that includes a TFS server, it includes code, sample code, et cetera, in this VM. It's a hands-on lab kind of experience where you can go and test out the entire suite of our application lifecycle management offering in one spot. So if you pull down this VM, which is on the download, the ALM VM at that link there, you have the entire environment that you can go test drive. So TFS is installed, the latest Visual Studio bits are installed, sample code, Tailspin Toys, a bunch of sample code in there, work items that are already filled out. So it's essentially a simulation of a medium-sized business that's already kind of in flight that you can see all these features in action. Highly recommend you pulling that down and checking out. The other one is that we mentioned earlier is Ask the Experts in the TLC area. A bunch of folks on the product teams are going to be there to answer any questions that we're not going to have a chance to answer here around all the features that we've been showing you today. I also want to make sure that everyone heard the announcement this morning. I think Scott Guthrie mentioned it in the keynote that basically said, listen, our Team Foundation Server preview site, tfspreview.com, is no longer taking invitations. It's open for every one of you can go hit that site and create a hosted TFS account as of this morning. So highly recommend you doing that at tfspreview.com, which is listed here. They've got a bunch of new content so you can learn what does it mean to be on the hosted TFS site and so forth. Please check that out. Love to get your feedback on that one.
The other nice thing about that is it's kind of buried in the text here, but we are announcing that there will be a free level of the Team Foundation service. There's also going to be an upsell version as well. We don't have any details on the specific features that you're getting, but everything's free during the Team Foundation service preview, and we'll, of course, talk about more about the different pricing levels later on.
That's right.
There's a few other ways to get started with Team Foundation Server. You may have seen that we announced a Team Foundation Server 2012 Express version as well. And so my friend Martin Woodward is actually doing two sessions. One, he's talking about the Team Foundation service, that's Dev 340. He's also talking about the Team Foundation Server Express product. So if you've never worked with Team Foundation Server before, you can now get up and running for free. A team up to 5 people, I believe it is, on Team Foundation Server Express. That session is Dev 346. And for those of you that have larger teams, our friend Jeff Levinson is going to be talking about his experience running Team Foundation Server in a very large enterprise. And that's going to be Dev 343.
Great. So we've mentioned a few of these sessions, but I wanted to put in the slides that you can pull off the media content all the related breakout sessions. I'm not going to leave that here for you guys to write down, but just these are part of the slides. Lots of breakout sessions here. This is the first one. Here's the second one. All of these breakout sessions are designed to go dig into the features that we just showed you and give you more information on that. So with that, oh, and the hands-on labs, I forgot about that. We got that VM I was talking about, plus a bunch more, in the hands-on lab section out in the TLC area. Go check that out. Lots of good stuff there. And with that, I really appreciate your time. Have a great tech ed, and fill out your evals. Thank you.
Thank you.